Hour number three of Primetime Sports. It's Canada's most listened to sports talk show on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Bob McCown and Ken Reid in our Toronto studios.
And this is Canada's most underrated band of all time.
You know, there's a half of the audience can't even hear the song.
Hey, I can.
Yeah, I know we're on TV. Oh, the music's on TV now, too?
See?
Really? They kicked in for the cash?
More royalties for Miles Goodwin.
Wow. Another ridiculous expenditure by the people at Sportsnet. They know how to spend money on stupid things, don't they?
No. There's no bad money spent on April Wine.
Yes. Sent me to Vegas. Fools.
Yeah, they'd probably take that one back.
I can't get over this Brady stuff. I'm like outraged by it. It's just stupid.
There's no comparable. Jared said it, the same thing we said. If what are you going to go around and fine and suspend every National Hockey League player who has an illegal curve in his stick, every baseball player who uses the rosin bag or doctors his ball a little too much? I mean, it's just, yeah, it's not ethical, but it's such a minor thing, and did it really impact the game that much?
Either way, whether Brady knew or didn't know, and you have to I presume he knew.
Of course he knew.
But whether you can prove it or not, sure, you got to give him something. I acknowledge that from the day one. You got to give him something. $500,000 fine. Something fairly serious. 4 games? $1 million fine? Number one draft choice? And a number 4 draft? Are you serious?
You know who is the most bummed out about this suspension, I think? Locker room attendants everywhere. Because they've been deflating and inflating these footballs for these guys and getting freebie stuff and tips from the quarterbacks. And now they're gonna have to say, well, I got to inflate it to what's the exact amount?
12.5.
I'm going to have to inflate it to 12.5 square inch.
You know what?
No tip for me.
Well, we'll talk more about it a little bit later on. Here's our friend Pat Hankin, special assistant to the Toronto Blue Jays. So, Hankin, how are you, by the way?
Good.
You heard about this Brady stuff, huh?
I just read it. I just learned it 5 minutes ago, yeah.
So, former Michigander, you know.
Yeah, no, I remember watching him at Michigan Wolverine games, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't play a whole lot, but he played enough. wow, 4 games. Okay, so let me ask you. During your whole, it's over now for you. You know, your career's over as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever do anything to the baseball?
I did. I did one time in Anaheim. Yeah, I did.
What'd you do?
I had a little KY jelly on my pants, and tried it. I threw one pitch in the big leagues with it.
And?
Now, it did. It tumbled.
Did it, huh?
It actually tumbled down, and it actually worked a little bit. But I just didn't like doing it. I didn't really trust it. I didn't know where the ball was going to go. It felt like it was squirting out for me.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I did do it one time, though, in Anaheim. I'll never forget it. Actually, the hitter was Mo Vaughn, too. I remember that.
Well, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it against him.
Exactly. I couldn't get him out, so I figured I'll try everything.
Well, so I tried to make the point earlier. Can you imagine you leave the footballs, you do the testing 4 hours before game time, then you give the teams the footballs and say, now behave. Don't do anything with them. Can you imagine if you'd given a whack of baseballs before the game, 2 hours, 3 hours before the baseball game to Gaylord Perry, what those baseballs would have looked like by the time he got ready to pitch?
Oh, exactly. I mean, especially some of the guys, I remember we would collect balls in the dugout when they'd get fouled off.
And yeah.
We had like 8 or 9 of them lined up on the back of on the bench with all the same scuffs. Had the exact same scuff.
Really, huh?
Oh, yeah. You wouldn't want to do that. Those balls are sacred. You can't be letting anyone touch those.
Well, you know, I mean, if you let them touch them, they're going to do something to them. And then you come down like the sword of Damocles against guys. You know, I mean, the worst thing that happened to a pitcher was getting thrown out of a game and maybe missed one start. Like, that was it.
Right. You know, the big thing for pitchers is pine tar more than anything.
Well, yeah.
That's the one substance that most of the pitchers use, or some of them do.
Well, better grip on the ball, really, huh?
That's all it is, yeah, especially sometimes early in the year when it's cold and dry. And, you know, when I pitched, you couldn't go to your mouth either, you know, with your throwing.
That's right.
They let the guys do that now on the dirt, so that's a big advantage, too.
Pat, did you look at guys using pine tar as cheating or gamesmanship?
You know what? I did it. So I can't accuse anyone of anything as far as cheating. I just did it for a better grip. I didn't think it really did a whole lot to making the ball move.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to throw my curveball and fastball with it. But, I mean, a lot of guys use a little bit of pine tar on your glove. I mean, it's not, you know, the way I looked at it was the hitters were allowed to use pine tar to hold the bat.
Yeah.
But is it wrong? You're darn right it's wrong.
Sure, there's rules, and you got to abide by the rules. But the punishment, I mean, this is pretty severe, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it is. I was shocked. When I read it, I thought, did they fine him $1 million? But it was Ryan told me when I was waiting on hold that
it's the team.
The team, yeah, that's what I assumed. But I just wasn't sure the way I read it. It looked like it was him who got fined.
Well, I mean, look, at between he and Giselle, $1 million is not exactly the end of the world. You know, they make that in a weekend. So
they tip over their golf bag.
Yeah, you tip over the golf bag and $1 million falls out. Yeah. You go, oh, well, we'll get it tomorrow. Back to baseball in general terms. What's your sense of this this pitching staff, specifically the starting rotation so far this year? It started to get a little better. Dickey wasn't great yesterday. The two performances before him were significantly improved. Is this just a matter of these guys, you know, finding their rhythm?
You know, I think with Dickey's game yesterday, gosh, if Napoli pops that ball up, you know, it's a two-out, three-run homer in the first. I mean, he gives up one if Plar makes that catch. Unbelievable catch and attempt, by the way.
Yeah, well, he had it and then lost it.
You know, he's so close to giving up zero runs in that inning, and then you're going, okay, now we're going into the sixth inning, 0-0, or and he gives up the two-run bomb to Pablo. But I guess what I'm trying to say is sometimes with pitching, some of the things are just out of your control. You know, especially R.A. and especially Burley, they're contact guys that rely on defense. You're going to have stretches during the season where balls are just finding holes. It's just part of the baseball, and it's what makes the game great.
I thought the Pablo pitch was a pretty good pitch, actually.
Yeah, I actually missed that one. I was in the car listening.
It was down and in.
Was a good pitch.
Wow, yes, the honey hole for the lefty.
Well, it is the honey hole, but I mean, you don't really want to throw it there, but it was moving. You know, it wasn't one of those flat ones. Like, you know, the other home run pitch was pretty much a BP fastball.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, this one at least was diving, and Pablo did a good job going down to get it.
You know, I think with R.A., too, you got to remember, he comes over, wins the Cy Young, high expectations when he came over here.
Sure.
He came to the AOE, smaller field, DH, better lineups, tough parks to pitch in. And then, you know, when you look back at his time as a Blue Jay, he's done nothing but answer the bell and pitch a lot of innings. And there's a big value for that
sure.
for the organization. So I know I listen to the fans, and they expect this guy to go out and throw up a 2 ERA in the AL East. It's really not realistic. It's a tough division to pitch in. And, you know, like I said, R.A., he eats up a lot of innings, and he's been a very durable starter for us, and he keeps us in the game. And until we have five guys that are better than him, then, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Pat, when R.A.'s not striking guys out, is that a sign that his knuckleball isn't moving enough?
I think there is some alarm there, you know. But that being said, again, I think it's cyclical. There's going to be stretches where he's going to go three starts in a row and strike out 20 guys, potentially, you know, or 15. And he's just going through a stretch right now where the ball's not dancing a whole lot. And, you know, they're making contact. I read that whole thing about how there are only two guys swung and missed at it the other day against Boston. I wouldn't be – as long as he feels healthy, I think at the end of the day, his numbers will be there. He'll throw his 200 innings. He's going to win double digits in wins. He eats up a ton of innings for our pen. That stuff has a real trickle effect on the staff.
What did you think of Aaron Sanchez? I think it was a Friday night, Bob. They got a good showing out of Sanchez. He went
well. He was better.
Yeah, he was better. Exactly.
I don't think it was good yet, but it was better.
He improved. Progress, we'll call it.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. His stuff looked electric. Matter of fact, at times when he's in a groove and he's really throwing the ball and hitting a spot, I mean, it reminds me of Dave Steeb.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way his ball sinks into the righty and the way he can throw that snap curveball. He's got tremendous stuff. He just has to keep his pitches in the box and keep the ball down and stay aggressive. And I am not worried about Sanchez. I think you're going to see some really good starts here.
There's been a lot of talk about the Blue Jays finding another starter and moving Sanchez back to the bullpen. I'm not a big fan of that. I understand a lot of guys in the Blue Jay organization got their start in the bullpen. But I'm not sure with this guy that it's the right move. What's your position on it?
I'm with you, and I've heard you say this a lot. I've heard you say this, how you don't want to spend money in the bullpen.
Yep.
And I agree with you. I think that the starters are setting the tempo for that team. And, you know, just like tonight, Estrada's pitching. I mean, you're only as good as your next starter. So for me, Sanchez is one of our best pitchers, and I think he deserves a pitch every fifth day. Now, is our staff better if he becomes a closer? Why does everybody think that this guy's just going to step into the ninth inning on crucial innings and all of a sudden start pounding the strike zone? I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you want 200 innings or 180 innings or do you want 50 innings? I get the whole back end of the bullpen, but I'm comfortable with Cecil, Loop, Delabar now. Tapera looked great the other day. You know, these guys have come along pretty good in the bullpen. They're starting to pitch really good, and I just think that Sanchez – has overpowering stuff, and if he figures it out, and I know he will, and he already has, he's going to be electric for a long time here, and I'm a big fan of him staying in the rotation if it was up to me.
Pat, I was talking to a former big leaguer on the weekend, and he said Sanchez's stuff, it's so good. And when you're saying what you're saying, does that mean he has to know where it's moving to? Because his fastball moves so much. Does he know when he lets it go, does he actually know where it's going to end up, or does it move too much on him and he doesn't really know where it's going to go yet?
And that's a good point. I mean, what happens is your ball's sinking and running into the righty, and you don't know where to start the ball.
Right.
And if you trust it and you go, okay, I'm going to throw it down the middle, it's going to move. But in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, what happens if it doesn't move?
Mm-hmm.
Now
right.
I'm throwing a center cut, you know, batting practice fastball right down the middle. And, guy, I don't care how hard you throw. If it's straight, they're going to hit it if it's in the middle. So for me, Sanchez, he's consistent with his pitches. He just needs to, you know, refine his skills a little bit. He just needs to trust his fastball and be aggressive, especially early. Put it to you this way. The first three pitches, this is one thing as a pitcher. You want to be 1-2, not 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
That means that two out of the first three pitches need to be in that box. And that's his mentality. That's what he has to do every fifth day.
Is that why he's been walking guys, do you think, early in the season?
You know, I don't know about that. I don't know if he's, you know, I walked a lot of guys. I tell the guys all the time, I walked 90 guys in eight ball 1 year. So for me, I became a control pitcher. That's why I'm always a true believer that I think that a guy can, A, learn how to practice in between starts, get quality, not quantity. You know, you go out there and throw for 15 minutes in between starts, and that's all you can do. You can't shoot free throws all day long like an NBA player. You know, as a pitcher, you only get 10, 15 minutes to practice in between starts, so get the best out of it. That's one of the things that you have to learn as a major leaguer is how to practice. And I think that as a reliever, you get to stay in there every 2 or 3 days. You really don't practice a whole lot. You're in the games every 3, 4 days. But as a starter, sometimes when you pitch bad, those 4 days in between seem like 8. And it can really snowball. So for me, it's just staying positive, being aggressive. And like I said, two out of those first three pitches, those need to be strikes. Whether they put him in play or not, you're 1-2. Big advantage for a pitcher.
What do you think the influence of Martin is on this pitching staff in general and Sanchez specifically in terms of the learning curve? I know he caught him in spring training with some regularity. He's now had a handful of starts with him. But doesn't it take time to figure out where the catcher has to set up and what kinds of pitches work in certain situations for each guy?
Absolutely, and I think as the season grows, you'll see the connection between Russell and the starters for sure. You know, the thing about Russell is he brings such a high level of respect from his peers. The players really respect what he does, the way he plays and how hard he plays and the most durable position on the field. So he's a leader by trade. And what happens is he's out there trying to call pitches that are going to work for that night. You know, you may,
sure.
You know, 5 days later, it might be different. He may not have a good feel for his curveball. I remember games, Bob and Ken, I remember games where I wouldn't have a curveball until the fourth inning.
Right.
And I used to tell the catcher in the dugout, hey, stay with it now. It's going to come. I don't have it right now, but it's going to be there. We got to stay with it. You know, at least call it 0-2 or call it when I'm 1-2 so I don't get hurt with it. Or I'll try to bounce it and get a feel for it. So those are things as a catcher-pitcher relationship that you have to be able to monitor and adjust and evolve as the game goes on.
Is there anything about what you've seen from Sanchez that suggests to you he'll be anything other than a front line of the rotation pitcher?
I have high expectations for him, but I'll tell you what, he's got the best stuff. He's got a great arm. He's got a great body. He works hard. You know, he is just needs to relax and get in that comfort zone. You know, it's kind of like, I'll use the example with Pilar. Pilar, when he got called up last year, looked a little bit, you know, out of touch.
Well, he was overwhelmed.
He's swinging at balls, and then all of a sudden you start to feel comfortable at that level, and you go, wow, wait a minute, man, I belong here. I definitely belong here. And then all of a sudden you start playing better, and I think that's what's going to happen with Sanchez as you see him in the rotation.
Well, Pilar, I mean, they kept throwing him breaking balls on the outside half of the plate, and he was chasing pitches he had no chance to hit. And he started laying off those pitches and waiting for something that he could get his bat on, and the difference has been tangible.
It has, and I mean, the guy's a good baseball player. He helps your team win, even when he doesn't hit. He still helps your team win, and that's a big value.
What did you see from Hutch? I don't know whether he is through this funk that went from game two till his last start, and it wasn't perfect, but it was a lot better. What do you think happened to him?
You know, I think with Hutch, he's got to use his changeup. Even in games when he doesn't have a good changeup, I still think you need to throw it just to show the bench and show the lefties. And then, you know, he got a lot of strikeouts of that high fastball. And, you know, sometimes the league makes a small adjustment on you. And they go, you know what, guys, let's make sure we get the ball down. Let's see this guy down. And because when he gets the ball up, you really can't hit it. It looks great, but you can't hit it.
Yeah.
And especially Hutch, he's got a great arm, 93, 94. And then he's got the big slurve. You know, with Hutch, he just has to locate his pitches better, Bob. I mean, that's the biggest thing. And the whole fifth inning thing, I thought that was really cool by Gibby going out there and having a mound visit, because I went through a fifth inning jitter, I call it, in the minor leagues, where it just seemed like I'd go four scoreless and then I'd go out in the fifth, I'd have a 5-run lead, and I'd be like, I had all these negative thoughts, like, when's if you don't get through the fifth, or you got to get through the fifth to get the win. And
yeah,
it was like a fifth inning jitter thing. It was kind of weird. And then I finally outgrew it, and I might have been in like Double-A at the time, I can't remember. But you're going to go through stretches like that, and maybe he's going through that little fifth inning jitter thing. So when Gibby ran out there, I thought that was really cool, because it wasn't Pete, and I love Pete, but it's different when the manager comes out to talk to you. I could tell you that as a pitcher.
Well, and it doesn't happen very often. I don't remember the last time Gibby did it.
It doesn't happen very often. And I remember one time Cito came out to me, and I remember, holy cow, Cito's coming out. And I knew I wasn't getting taken out of the game, and he yelled at us, he yelled at me and Lance Parrish on the mound, because of a pitch I made to John Jaha. But that's a whole other story. But I guess my point is that I thought that was a great mound visit. I think he's going to be over that fifth inning thing, and I really truly think that he's on pace. He'll be all right, you guys. I think it's just a bad stretch here in April, early May. Be okay.
Pat, I'm a sucker for these nice little human interest stories that occur during a major league season. And we saw a nice little story last night when Ryan Tepera came up, 27 years old, makes his major league debut. I think he went two scoreless innings last night, didn't give up a hit. You can tell me more about this guy, but this guy wasn't, I mean, he spent the whole year last year in Buffalo, and he kind of came back a whole new man this spring, didn't he, somehow?
He did. I mean, I had some talks with Tepera. He's been with us a while. I've seen him in the minor leagues. He was a starter with us in the minor leagues for years, and they finally moved him to the pen. I think he's kind of found his groove, kind of like a Paul Quantrill did. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he was a starter all through the minors, started one year in the big leagues, and all of a sudden he found his groove in the pen, and boom, the rest is history. I think that's what you're going to see with Tep. He's got a great arm. His stuff went up a click when he got moved to the pen, and now he's got, you know, he's always had good control of his fastball and slider. I told him in spring training, I said, hey, you're a big leaguer. Act like it.
Mm-hmm.
I told him, and I did. I told him. I asked Pete. I said, Pete, I'm going to tell Tepera he's got a chance to make this team. You good with that? He goes, absolutely. So I went up to Tepera, and I said, hey, act like a big leaguer. Don't, like, walk around with, you know, with the big, huge eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
Act like a big leaguer. You're a big leaguer. You've been here a long time. And you know, and I'm happy for him. He's a good guy.
He came back with a cut fastball this spring, didn't he, that he didn't really have before?
He did. Yeah, he does have a little cut fastball now. He can throw it up and into the lefties. That's something Hutch, I think, messed around with as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you cool with guys just kind of experimenting with stuff in the off season like that and coming back to spring with maybe something new in their arsenal?
You know what? I think as a pitcher, especially starting pitchers, you're always experimenting with grips.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially because you have a 4-pitch mix or a 3-pitch mix, you're constantly looking to try to get them to get better and to have an improvement with some of your pitches, constantly asking other players that have better pitches. Like, I remember I used to ask guys all the time, you know, how do you hold your changeup? Because I couldn't kill ball speed for me. So it was a tough pitch. So I asked everybody in MLB, how do you hold your changeup? How do you hold your changeup? So I think the pitchers are constantly trying to evolve and get better and tweak their grips and anything to gain an edge and win.
Well, you got to do that, and you got to continually adjust because the hitters are always going to adjust to you. So it's not just location, but you know, if you can come up with a different pitch that you have, it's hard, I know, especially when you're in your 20s and you've been throwing the same 3 or 4 pitches your entire life. But if you can find something else, it'll shake those hitters up. It'll prolong your career. Did you have a pitch that you added to your repertoire after you got to the bigs?
You know what I did? I came up as a fastball curveball, and then in 1996, Mel Queen was our pitching coach.
Yep.
He showed me a cut fastball. And then I threw a cut fastball for the next 3 or 4 seasons. And then at the very end of my career, I threw a changeup. And the problem was that my changeup and fastball were damn near the same speed. Yeah. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, I constantly was trying to get better with different grips and changing the speed. And sometimes you go out there and you don't have a good curveball. You just have to go with what you have. That was one of the things I preached to the relievers was, don't worry about your stuff. You're going out there for one inning. Your stuff is what it is that night.
How did you hold the changeup? Or did you experiment with a bunch of different grips?
I tried every grip. You can only imagine. I tried every grip. Seriously, I bet you I tried 10 grips.
Really?
I ended up going with the one that David Cohn showed me.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was like a split finger Fosh type of thing. Yeah.
Did it dive?
No, yeah, I dove over the infielder's head.
Was there one pitch that you tried to throw but you couldn't?
Yeah, I couldn't throw a sinker. I couldn't sink the ball, and I couldn't slow the ball down. Those were my two nemesis as a pitcher. I tried to do both pretty much my whole career, and I was not very good at either one of them. But, you know, I did cut the ball into the lefty, so I had that.
Yeah, you were okay. Yeah. Did you ever mess with a split finger? Because some guys, you know, you got to have the right hand, and you got to have the right size of hand even to throw it effectively. Did you mess with it?
Dead on. The size is huge. My two fingers, my power fingers that I used to hold the ball, when I separated them as far as I could, it was a decent distance. When I compared it to Jack Morris, Jack was like my middle finger and my index finger. It was like three of my fingers versus two of mine. Does that make sense?
No, it does. Yes. Because you almost have to exercise in order to get your fingers to spread them far enough to wedge that baseball in there. You can't just separate them like, you know. I have the same kind of thing. And I could never figure that pitch out.
Pat, did you ever run into a pitcher who didn't want to share his secrets?
Not too often, but you know, Clemens didn't share much information when I played with Roger.
Really?
No, not much. I mean, he worried more about tipping his pitches, and he used to ask me who the hitters were and how I went about getting them out. And I remember thinking, my gosh, man, you're the Rocket, and you're asking me. He focused more on the umpires. He cared more about who the home plate umpire was than he did.
Oh, really? And their tendencies.
And I asked him, I said, how can we do that? And he said, you know what, Pat? He goes, I've been in the league a long time. He goes, it's almost like a revolving door. He said, those umpires, he goes, I like to know which one's called low, which one's calls away. He had like a book on the umps.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense when you think about it.
Do you spend much time with Steve?
I do. Well, he lives in Reno. I just talked to him the other day, actually. You know, Stephen Brunt was teasing me about the whole no-hitter thing, the reunion. I said, what are you doing? I said, they're coming to your house. I go, do the interview, for God's sakes.
He's a strange bird, isn't he?
You know what it is? Dave doesn't like to fly. He doesn't like to leave his little secure area. The guy won't go 5 miles from his house. It's, you know, he just...
Sounds like you, Bob.
Yeah, a little bit.
Don't you think, Pat? Maybe Bob and Dave...
I was on an airplane last week. Give me a break.
Against your own better judgment.
Well, I'd rather not.
In Vegas, I heard, you should have went and saw Dave. He'd have got a kick out of that.
Yeah, Dave, Steber and I never really got along that great. But then again, I didn't get along with a lot of the guys back in that era.
You know, Dave, too, he came back and made his comeback in 98, and I remember him telling me flat out, God, he goes, I regret the way I acted with the media. And I said, and he goes, looking back on it, he said, I was brutal. I remember him telling me that.
Well, he wasn't a nice guy, and I respected him like crazy as a pitcher. He's as good a pitcher as I've seen.
I agree.
And people that didn't appreciate Dave Steeb, they don't know what they missed. He was awesome.
Bob Lamont, we share the same agent. Bob told me a story. If you have time, do we have time?
Yeah, quick.
Okay. He said that they're playing the Yankees. He beat the Yankees 1-0 or 2-1. He said they were back in their hotel room having a beer, playing cribbage. He said, hey, did you pitch around Reggie to get the Winfield? He looked at him and he said, you know what? He goes, I just throw the ball down the middle, and one goes one way and one goes the other. And he goes, they're not hitting it. That was his mentality. That's how simple he kept it.
Wow.
And I always tell that story because I think so many pitchers overanalyze and just break it down way too much. Clemens was the same way. Clemens was kept it simple. I'm going to be aggressive. His biggest line I've told all the guys in the organization, get ahead, get out of the middle. I stole that from Roger because it was just a simplicity style of pitching.
Yeah.
And it really works. And Dave had the same. Dave Stewart was the same way. David Cone. I mean, most of these guys had that in common. They could locate their fastball and keep it simple. And that was a really good common denominator among all the good players I played with.
Fascinating stuff. Hope all's well. And we look forward to seeing you soon, I hope. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Pat Henken, the Blue Jays special assistant, the former Cy Young Award winner. And some people think someday the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, Pat's got to make the decision to come back to baseball on a kind of a full-time basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he's inclined to do that. Certainly, it hasn't happened yet, but maybe. And there aren't many smarter guys in the sport of baseball than Pat Henken. I can tell you that right now. When we come back, Bruce Boudreau will join us. Well, they made it through.
They did.
It had its moments.
It did.
A couple of easy wins. a couple of come-from-behind wins, a little nervousness, and now the Chicago Blackhawks. It don't get any easier. Gabby, when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
To let me know. 26 before the hour on Primetime. McCowan and Reed in our Toronto studios.
That's not April 1.
We usually don't get fed on Mondays. But we did today. Thanks to our friends at Pizza Nova for tons of pizza to get us through this Monday. Take advantage of Pizza Nova's That's Amore Pizza for Kids fundraising event all this month. Walk into any participating Pizza Nova outlet and get a medium pepperoni pizza for only $4.39 plus taxes. That's pretty good. And a buck from every pizza sold will go to Variety Village Children's Charity. Our thanks to our friends at Pizza Nova. You know, if Boudreaux was here, we'd have had enough to share with him.
We have a ton. And you know what I brought for dinner tonight, of course?
Pizza.
Yeah, and then I come in and there's pizza everywhere.
Well,
that's how cool I am.
That ain't all bad. Well, it's a new horizon, a new barometer for the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks. Bruce Boudreaux joins us. Congratulations.
Well, thanks, Bob. Thanks, Ken.
No problem.
You a pizza guy? You got to be a pizza guy.
Everybody is.
No, I'm salad only.
Yeah. Salad ain't food. Salad comes with the food.
Oh, okay. My body.
I mean, in all honesty, this was a bar that you hadn't been able to climb over, and I'm not here to I don't put a lot of stock in that, but people have been writing about it, talking about it a bit. Did it seem like a bar for you that was important?
You know what? It was only important because everybody talked about it, I think. I'm like you. I didn't really put much stock into it. I mean, you do as well as you can if you can't, you know, or if the team doesn't go as far as you'd like. It didn't really bother me until everybody has to write about it.
Yeah. Well, that bar is now done. It's been less than 24 hours since you beat Calgary. When do you start thinking about Chicago?
Oh, we were meeting about Chicago all day today and putting all our stuff together. You know, I mean, we don't know when the series is going to start yet. So, I mean, it could probably start as early as Thursday. I don't know. So we have to get as much information as possible about them, stuff that we don't already know, and present it to the players starting tomorrow.
Bruce, any concerns about Corey Perry after that hit he took from Matt Stajan last night?
You know, there's always concerns, but Corey's a pretty tough guy and pretty resilient. We're hoping he's going to be ready for game one. You know, he was at the rink today. He was fine.
It looked a lot worse in the initial stages than it apparently turned out to be. You had to be thinking, uh-oh, when you saw him hobble off the ice.
The way he went off the ice, I was pretty worried. I was automatically thinking, okay, who do we move up to his line? What are the, you know, we got 11 forwards for the rest of the game. And then I was pretty surprised that he came back not much later.
When you start preparing for a team, hockey is such a different sport. It's so instinctive. How do you prepare for any team, and not just the Blackhawks? What kinds of things are you talking about, thinking about? Is it beyond line matchups?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of stuff, Bob. Even though I remember in October when you said that coaching hockey and baseball or basketball, you just stand out there. You don't do anything.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to phone you that day, by the way. But that being said, I remember what I do is it's a lot of system stuff. We don't go over individuals as much. I mean, let's face it, we know what Patrick Kane brings to the the table. We know what Duncan Keith and the great many players, of whether it's Chicago or any team, brings. But, I mean, every team breaks out a certain way. Every team has certain characteristics about them. Every team, you know, does certain things off of face-offs. And those are the kind of things that I focus on.
Bruce, you guys have outscored your opponents 17-4 in the third and overtime in these playoffs. You were kings of the comeback in the regular season. What do you do? I want to know what you do when the second period ends until the third period starts. What do you say to these guys? Is there some kind of magic thing the world is not aware of?
Well, hold on. Don't ask Boudreaux to say what he says.
No. I want to know what he, like, does he go
this
into...
This is a family radio show.
Well, we know what he's kind of... We know words he uses sometimes, but you go into the... You go cool down. What happens? I mean, I just don't... Like, obviously, you got a great third period team. What goes on?
You know, I think it's more the players than it's anything I do. I mean, maybe at the beginning when the core of the group here, whether it was last year or the year before or whatever, we talked an awful lot about believing that it can be done. Mm-hmm. And if you believe, you can't get it done until you believe it can be done. But now I think they're at the point where they believe they can come back. They believe that they're not out of it. And you know, usually at home especially, you get that first goal and it livens the crowd and it energizes the players. And, you know, it's been really, this year's been crazy because we've been able to do it so often. I think there's more of a calmness around the room that, okay, you know, just stay the course and good things will happen to you.
You guys were so dominant in the third last night after you tied it up, but you couldn't get that go-ahead goal. Was there any concern? Were you thinking, man, this is just so Calgary. This is so Calgary. Something's going to happen here.
I was a bundle of nerves, the last thing we wanted to do was go back to Calgary in front of 20,000 screaming Canadians and then have to have, you know, something good really happen to you. So, I mean, I think they were determined that nobody wanted to go back, and we played as hard as we could for as long as we could, and we were just glad that in overtime it ended rather early because our guys were starting to get fatigued a little bit.
I made, with Bruce Boudreaux, the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks, I made this sort of prediction. It would not surprise me at all if the average score in this series with the Blackhawks was 4-3. How do you feel about that?
Well, geez, I know they've got an awful lot of weapons, and
well, so do you.
I know, but I, well, we've been scoring goals, and that's great. But I think we've, out of the nine games we've played, only two goals we've allowed, two or more, and we're really focusing on the defensive aspect of the game. But I know Chicago is very good defensively. I mean, if it was the average score was 4-3, boy.
That would surprise you.
It wouldn't surprise me, but I'd take my chances with that.
Guess it depends who wins the games, right, Bruce?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, when we're scoring goals, it makes our team individually feel an awful lot of good about themselves. I know certain guys score a goal and it really energizes them, and they play an awful lot better during the course of the game.
Just from a pure hockey standpoint, I know here at work we've been talking about it. I know a lot of fans were speculating during the second round. Imagine if Anaheim plays Chicago. What great hockey that's going to be. Do you take any time to appreciate what great hockey this could be and step back from it a little, or are you just too deep in to even think about that?
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I mean, or I don't think about it. I look at all the other series, quite frankly, and think how great that hockey is. And I think, geez, our hockey, series is pale in comparison. So, I mean, and I've thought about that on every series when I'm watching. So I don't think about how great it's going to be. I just hope we're good enough to stay in the same ring with that team.
In the greater Los Angeles area, you are not without competition for the attention of the sporting eyeballs in that marketplace. The Dodgers are off to a good start. The Clippers are marching along. Where are the Anaheim Ducks on the media radar, as far as you can tell?
Well, As far as I can tell, and this is just a, like, I don't really read the papers or any of that stuff.
No, coaches do. I understand. Yeah.
But when we get the media notes every day, you know, like from what's being written about our team in the playoffs or the other team, it's an awful lot thicker right now. I mean, there's where there would be an article, maybe two, there's now 15 articles about us. And I go around, when you're driving around town here in Anaheim, you see an awful lot of, and I would never have seen this before, Ducks flags hanging from people's cars.
Oh, really? Huh?
So I think the visibility is great. Yesterday we had almost all the Angel players. They rented two suites and watched the game. So I mean, it's getting to be pretty big, I think.
Has Snoop Dogg come out to the pond yet in these playoffs?
I wouldn't know Snoop Dogg from anybody, so I couldn't tell you.
I just hope he talks to Scott Oak if he does show up again.
That's well, I'm sure he will if he does make an appearance. I know this is I'm happy for you. You know I am, and I'm hoping you make the Stanley Cup final, and I hope you win the Stanley Cup. But this is costing me money. The fact that you're still in Anaheim and not here on the golf course with me, so. Whatever happens, happens. I'll have to make do.
That's going to happen soon enough, and I will be so out of golf shape, I'll only have to give you a stroke a hole. So or
done.
Side,
done. Taken.
side.
Taken. Too late. You said a stroke a hole.
Yeah, I know. It's not like it's not being recorded either. Take me off.
Gabby, congratulations. And we're looking forward to what ought to be. It just figures to be an awesome series mm-hmm. against Chicago. If it's half as good as we anticipate, it'll be great. Best of luck, pal. See you soon.
I appreciate it. Hope we can do this after the next round.
Yeah, man. Bruce Boudreau, the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks.
How come when you and I went golfing last year, we didn't play for money?
I didn't think you had any. See, I know Boudreau's got cash.
That's a very honest and as accurate assessment.
If you want to play this year for cash.
No, I'm not playing you for cash.
Well, we can negotiate.
Okay.
You know what they say about golf? The game is won and lost on the first tee. Nothing that happens afterwards is of any consequence. So yesterday at BMO Field, the Toronto FCs, is that what you call them?
The Reds. Or the Toronto FCs.
Well, played their first game in this reconfigured stadium. It's not done completely, but reconfigured.
Mm-hmm.
And lost. But that's not the story. At or near the beginning of the game, and our guests will tell us when, a banner appeared, I believe in one end zone of the game. In the stadium, that said, no Argos at BMO. Not long after that banner was unfurled, none other than the president, CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, along with a collection of authorities, some of them wielding weaponry, I'm led to believe, marched down from their lofty perch in the boxes, including Mr. Lewicki himself, went down to this group of fans and told them to cease and desist and to support the Reds.
Get rid of the sign.
Michael Przybylowski is a TFC supporter and among those, I guess, who was unveiling this banner. Michael, good of you to join us. Were you among those that created this banner and then unfurled it?
Hi, good evening, Bob and Ken. I appreciate you giving us a little voice here on your air. I know a lot of other interesting things happened today. We were part of the group that did unveil the banner. A couple other guys painted this one afternoon. We put it up, and then I believe Tim came down, and there happened to be, I guess, other people in the area, and they were joined by Tim. They came down and asked us to put it away just for this one game. And, we have a lot of respect for Tim Lewicki. He's done a lot of things here that differently than what previous CEOs, previous presidents, previous heads of TFC have done, and we have a lot of respect for him. And out of, you know, a little respect for him, we decided that it would be we would go along with him.
So you guys had
for the one game.
You had the option of they were it wasn't.
Well, I didn't get that far. I don't think.
It's the start of a new year. We've had a lot of disappointment over the past 8 years. It wasn't a battle I think any of us were ready to just fight for right that second. He asked for us just to have it down for one game and just that game only. And we said, you know what? We respect you, Tim. We and a lot of us do have a lot of respect for Tim Leibwicki. And we just wanted to concentrate on the game today. We agreed with him, even though he said, you know, out of respect for the players, we believe out of respect for the players, we are doing this because of them, because of the effects that the Argos could have on the playing pitch. And that was seen last year, for example, in a game at Chicago in September when the pitch was completely torn up due to just high school football play.
Are you planning then on re-unveiling that banner in game two?
It could appear as soon as this Wednesday. I don't think there's a definite decision yet. It really depends on, you know, how the media portray what's going on with the what's going on with the negotiations, and if there's a change in the negotiations, it definitely would affect the way if it comes out or not.
Quickly, did Tim say anything to you about the Toronto Argonauts plans, anything?
You know what? He's just same thing he says to all of you guys. Negotiations going on. Nothing new to report. And you know what? If there's anything else, you know, I'm sure someone will tweet it out.
So, but and position along with your combatos there is not necessarily being anti-Argo. It's concern about the quality of the pitch after an Argo game.
Among other things, yes, concerned about the pitch, concerned about Argo's lines being on the pitch or the gridiron lines being on the pitch.
Right.
But really, it comes down to the field. I mean, we talk about how BMO Field is a world-class facility. We talk about how Toronto FC wants to be a world-class team. And we feel that if we want to match these world-class adjectives, we need to have the world-class pitch. And we don't think you can have a world-class pitch with the Argos at BMO Field. And
yeah.
Tim Bezpachenko and Tim Leibwicki love to bring up the Wembley example. And let's be fair to Wembley. They had an NFL game there. And then about 5 or 6 days later, I believe England and Slovenia had a World Cup World Cup qualifying game. And the England manager absolutely ripped the football of the gridiron.
Right, because of the condition of the field, yeah. Michael, we're out of time. We got to go, but we'll stay in touch with you, and we'll watch with interest to see how you proceed and how TFC responds. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
Michael Przybylowski, TFC supporter. They put up a banner, said no Argos at BMO, and they were asked to take it down. Interestingly enough, as Michael's just told us, it was only for the opening game.
So it might be back on Wednesday.
Might be back. We'll see if they ask them to take it down a second time.
I enjoyed that it was a polite exchange, though. That's nice.
It seemed to be relatively polite.
Yes.
Although I don't think armed assistance were necessary in order to convey that message. But what do I know? We got to go. Good night from Toronto.